Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Hearts of LNP. I am Pam Ray, filling in for the regular hostess, Victoria Frost, who is getting some much-needed rest. And our thoughts and prayers and love, of course, are always with her. Now, we do extend to you an invitation to meet the minds and hearts of late-night poets, delve into pieces shared, and get excited about ink art, and celebrate great works that expose the heart. Now, as mentioned, I am a poet on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the website or the group to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut porn or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a little bit more adult content and language. Now, if that is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something for everyone's taste. Also, make sure to check out the anthologies on Amazon put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And tonight's topic, we are delving into poetry that uses nature imagery or nature to get its message across. And I'm looking forward to the show, and I would like to welcome Phil My Eyes. Phil, how's it going?
Hey, Pam, I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Like
I'm looking...
It's only been moments since I last saw. It's only been a moment or two
I
since
know.
I last saw. But that's
well,
okay.
It's been so long.
I've missed you.
I know.
Anyway,
I can't go more than 15 minutes without talking to you.
Seems that way, doesn't it? But I look forward to the show tonight. It'll be good.
Yes, me too. Lots of wonderful poetry. I'm looking forward to delving in, reading and commenting. And I do have a couple of people I'm going to bring on. First of all, Babbler, welcome. Glad you could join us.
Hello.
Ages. How are you?
Yeah. I'm doing well, so much better.
Awesome. And Faziana, welcome. Glad you could join us.
Thank you.
Did I drop?
No,
you're here. Yep, we hear you. Good to have you all here. Well, look at this. Could you get a cooler lineup? I should say cool and hot at the same time of women on one show.
There you go. Woo-hoo. I think we have
with
Friday night.
This lineup,
and,
the men should be knocking at the door to call in.
Yep. We got the whole Friday lineup sitting here on Sunday or Monday. Today's Monday, right? According to the
it is technically well, it depends on where you live, but you know.
Yeah, it's only 9:30 Sunday for me.
There you go.
Yep.
Oh my God! And I think it's 11:30 for Pam, right, Pam?
Yep. It is 11:30 Sunday for me.
It's 12:30 here for me. We're covering all the time zones. We've got.
We really are.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, battery dropped. Just in case you needed to know, Pam.
Okay, Babbler dropped, and Rex has joined us. And welcome, Rex. Glad you could join us.
Hey.
Hello, Rex.
What's up?
All right. Well, hopefully Babbler will call back. But in the meantime, we will go ahead and move forward. And Rex, of course, is just in time. Just in time for me to put him to work. So.
There you go.
With that be? Yeah, I know. He has really good timing, doesn't he? All right. The first poem up is a classic poem, After Apple Picking by Robert Frost. And Rex, go ahead. Give that a read for us, please.
After Apple Picking by Robert Frost. My long two-pointed lattice sticking through a tree toward heaven still. And there's a barrel that I didn't fill beside it, and there may be two or three. Apples I didn't pick upon some bough, but I am done with apple picking now. Essence of winter sleep is on the night. The scent of apples I am drowsing off. I cannot rub the strangers from my sight. I got from looking through a pane of glass. I skimmed this morning from the drinking trough. And held against the world of hoary grass. It melted, and I let it fall and break. But I was well upon my way to sleep before it fell, and I could tell what form my dreaming was about to take. Magnified apples appear and disappear, stem end and blossom end, and every fleck of russet showing clear. My instant arch not only keeps the ache, it keeps the pressure of a ladder round. I feel the ladder sway as the boughs bend. And I keep hearing from the cellar bin the rumbling sound of load on load of apples coming in, for I have had too much of apple picking. I am overtired of the great harvest I myself desired. There were 10,000 fruit to touch, cherishing hand lift down, not let fall, for all that struck the earth, no matter if not bruised or spiked with stubble, went surely through the cider apple heap, as of no worth. One can see what will trouble the sleep of mine, whatever sleep it is. Were he not gone, the woodchuck could say whether it's like his long sleep, as I describe its coming on, or just some human sleep. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And, you know, obviously being classic poets, with Robert Frost isn't a member of Late Night Poets, which is quite a shame, but I suppose that has something to do with him being dead. But I like to start out with a classic poem because I think it reminds us that there are people and poets that we have learned from. And when I think of a nature show, Robert Frost, Thoreau, those are some of the top ones that I think of. There are others, but and I just thought that was a wonderful read there. And Babbler, your thoughts on this classic poem?
I love Robert Frost. He's one of my favorites. I love the description of the scene of him, apple picking, but not apple picking. You know, he's lazing beneath the apple tree, looking around and taking in and just painting this beautiful scene as he kind of drifts off to sleep. The descriptions are just so wonderful, you know. What form my dreaming was about to take. Magnified apples appear and disappear, stem end and blossom end, and every fleck of russet showing clear. His imagery is just always so fantastic. I feel like you can see the scene and the boughs bending beneath the ladder. And I just love the imagery in this. It's just absolutely beautiful.
I have to agree. Well said there. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
She said be right back in the room, Kim.
Oh, okay. Didn't notice that. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts on this classic poem?
How many apples could a woodchuck chuck or woodchuck could chuck apples? Methinks he dipped into the cider so he could wear away the evening, the day's repast of working his arse off. Because clearly afterwards, he didn't take kindly to apples no more. So maybe the thought of cider wet his whistle so he could actually fall asleep gracefully instead of deadly.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Well said there. Yeah, I did like how this kind of had that, well, because he was flipping into that dream state. It had almost a surreal quality to it. And the idea of the harvesting of the apples representing something that you want, like once you have it, you're not sure that you want it. And I think what you said about the cider fits well with that idea there. So absolutely, as always, just wonderful imagery. And I very much enjoyed this classic poem. And Phil, your thoughts?
But my thoughts are I needed to find the studio. Robert Frost, what could you say? I mean, it was a wonderful poem, absolutely based on nature. Wonderful imagery. It's like a painting. You feel like you can touch what he's talking about. The image, the apple itself. It's incredible how he just paints the picture around you. And I think it was a great choice for an opening poem. Absolutely. And Aphasiana has read. Welcome.
Oh, welcome. Welcome back, Aphasiana. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and have us move on to the next poem, and that is Bear Mysteries by Poetic Creations. And Phil, will you give that a read for us, please?
What? Sure. Okay. This is called Bear Mysteries by Poetic Creations. His raven for muscles and hungry wolves for eyes. Fang defeats the pendulum on the days that he cries. Nude is the fruitful flesh, basking in lapping roots. Her smile steals the scene when stomping in boots. Happy with every splash, splashing is here and there. Mystery remains the bear, for the light has passed. End poem.
Great read there, Phil. And Rex, your thoughts?
Something with the tone, the first couple lines has me pondering. I can't figure it out. He has raven for muscle and hungry wolf for eyes. Fang defeats the pendulum on the day that he cries. Something hungry lurks in the woods, so to speak. There's almost a Little Red Riding Hood and the wolf that walks in this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does kind of have that feel to it. It's interesting, though, how it kind of has that dark feel, but then there's a line like, happy with every splash, splashing is here and there. That really takes a turn in tone, almost like joy was found at that moment. But yeah, I like that, Rex, that observation about the Red Riding Hood and the wolf. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I guess for me, I picture this kind of voyeuristic guy watching a nude woman in rain boots splash in puddles, which is really kind of fascinating for me. You know, he's just watching, you know, nude is the fruitful flesh basking in wrapping roots. Her smile steals the scene when stomping in boots. Happy with every splash, splashing is here and there. Mystery remains the bear, for the light has passed. You know, so he doesn't talk to her, like he doesn't approach her. He just lets the opportunity go by. But there's, you know, I find this fascinating. Just, you know, to me, that's what I get out of it is a guy ogling a naked woman enjoying mud puddles. It's really a fascinating brevity because there's so many different places you can go. Very interesting. I liked it.
I like that thought of, you know, I like that what you drew out of it. I have to say, though, if you're a naked woman wearing boots and splashing in mud puddles, well, then you're going to get ogled. You just, you know, like, I don't see that happening too often.
I'm surprised he's digging in with the boots, considering he's probably got a bunch of bouncing Bettys running up there, too. So,
right? good point there. But I like that this is a brevity, and yet it's written in couplets, and yet it tells an intriguing story that does have a mythological-type feel to it from the very first couplet. He has raven for muscle and hungry wolves for eyes. Then, you know, really thoughtful all the way through. And fruitful flesh basking in wrapping roots really has a sensual tone to it. And mystery remains the bear, for the light has passed. The light has passed feels like the moment has passed. The moment of joy has passed. And it's so when you use it something like that as a final line, it feels final. It feels like it's not a moment that's going to be gotten back. So absolutely intriguing and very well done. And Phil, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
You know, I think that the description in the beginning, he has raven for muscle and hungry wolves for eyes. I think that she is the object of his desires. He is the naked one. He just says she has boots and she's stomping in, you know, stomping in them. But happy with every splash, splashing is here and there. Mystery remains the bear. I don't think she's naked, for the light has passed. And I think that's, you know, he's just watching, waiting, wanting to see her naked, but it's yet to come. Now, I could be completely wrong. That's what I think. So great job, PC. Great job. Thank you.
I like that. Wonderful observations, everybody. It really is neat to see what everybody gets from the same piece. So thank you for sharing that with us, PC. Much appreciated. Up next, we have Two Big Owl Eyes by Pilla. And Babbler, would you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. Or if I say that and then accidentally click away, that's how I operate. Two Big Owl Eyes by Pilla. Look, look. Do you see those two big round eyes? Look so much of owl's eyes. How it's looking over the horizon, engrossed deep down the green valleys, tall green hills with this mustardy foliage, trying to spread its wings on the misty hills, grayish clouds going to attack. Those eyes with its reflection of water. The lake looks so edgy with a wooden deck. Looks like a boat was gone for the sail. End poem.
Wonderful read there, and thank you, Taylor, for sharing that with us. That is absolutely beautiful. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I really like how it's talking about, like, being able to see the horizon and the way that the foliage is changing, the mustardly foliage, makes me think that it's fall. And I love the picture of that. Trying to spread its wings on the misty hills is a really beautiful section of this. It's gorgeous imagery.
Absolutely. I have to agree. And Babbler, your thoughts. Are you mutating, Babbler?
I am. My dog licked my phone, and so it wasn't detecting my finger.
Yeah, wipe that puppy off first before you get an earful.
Oh, my God. It's been just me and the mute button for a variety of reasons today. I really enjoyed this, you know, in looking at the photo that's attached to it, there are these two kind of large circles on the side of the hill that don't seem to have a source. And, you know, what are they? I love the thought of them being owl eyes peering out into the horizon through this yellow trees, like these mustardy foliage. And I guess, you know, where Faziana had said fall, my mind went to like really early spring on like a mountain landscape when those high crests have those spring blooms on them. And they're so early that it really does look kind of yellow. And just peering over the edge. I also really appreciated the opening lines, the look, because it kind of has that repetitiveness of, like, the owl hoot. You know, it's not hoo-hoo, but it's still, like, that two-toned monosyllable words that I think kind of pull you into the owl theme. I really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. I have to say, and the other thing that the look is that it adds enthusiasm because she's not just describing the picture. She's telling you, like, with excitement and enthusiasm. And I do find those light circles that, you know, it's very intriguing. Like, it just really makes me wonder what the artist was thinking because it seems very random to have that area lighted up when there doesn't seem to really be a source of light shining on there. But, just absolutely wonderful imagery and great comment, Babbler. And Rex, your thoughts?
You're missing what it really is. You look to the left, that's sunrise coming. That's why you've got those that tinge of yellow and the eyes kind of peeking out. And just to the right of the eyes, you got another little yellow swath of sun that's sitting there. So this is an
isolated
take using sunrise as the bend that gives the eye the thought of, because we're drawn to geometric shapes normally. We see things, whether it's in the clouds, cliffs, seeing a face on the piece of toast. We see those things because that's part of our chemical makeup. And we get drawn to pictures like this because it's got that lovely backdrop. You see the mirror reflection at the bottom. And when you've got a still lake like that, it reflects such a grand scheme of everything around you. You can turn the picture upside down if it's done right. And you can see it both ends the same way. But this was drawn cleverly from that picture, and it does appear that the owl eyes are looking out across this great expanse, and somewhere behind the top of the hills, you can imagine those wings spreading to take flight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like that you mentioned, Rex, that we're drawn to geometric shapes. And I also thought, I like when you mentioned how about the clear lake, because when you have a clear, still lake reflecting the tree lines and reflecting everything, it's absolutely beautiful. So well said there. And Phil, your thoughts.
So this was a great piece with good imagery, and it was a clever take on that image, most definitely. So, you know, I think that it's nicely penned, and thank you, Sheila.
Absolutely. All right, great comments, everybody. And up next we have Threading the Vine by Avril Luna. And Afasiana, would you give that a read for us, please?
Threading the Vine by Avelina. There is a simple aroma to vines. Non-toxic or not, there is an earthy tinge that dimly fades into my body as I breathe it in, much like you, and the way you wrap yourself like the vine, hiding all invasiveness, only showing beauty, but slowly suffocating. You know, that is what vines do. Some may lie dormant on the pedestals of tall trees, but underneath their roots merge and take heed of strength, just waiting to sprout when the time is right. How far can a root delve into earth? How far can you reach and feel my mortal coil? Flowers do not deny, for they envy the vine such power. Dainty cannot win the black surface. The false appearance is much too great. But I am learning to thread the vine, sacrificial experiments, if you will. After all, it takes one to know one. End poem.
Thanks, Reed.
Wonderful read there. I have to say that was very intelligent use of metaphors. I really liked that. And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
You got to go down to the middle of it. How far can root delve into earth? How far can you reach and feel my mortal coil? There's an almost cancerous thought that runs through it. Aroma, there's simple aroma to vine. It's not toxic or not. There's an earthy tinge that dimly fades in my body as I breathe it in. That notes that there's a thought where the brain comes alive at a memory that's tinged with an aroma. But this kind of walks a little deeper. The sense kind of comes with some kind of disease. It kicks in, and all of a sudden you've got this smell of something. And wrap yourself like the vine, hiding all invasiveness. It's running around the mind, digging in, taking hold. Like it could be cancerous. It could be a mental issue. And then the thought, dainty cannot win the black surface. The false appearance is much too great. This thought there too, the need to fight.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, it does have that kind of a thought there beneath the volume of, you know, something happening that's you know, kind of dark and, you know, that you don't have control, or at least that's kind of my thoughts. But excellent comment there. And Afasiana, your thoughts.
I really enjoyed reading this. It had a nice, interesting flow to it. And I like the way it talks about the vines being dormant and, like, the fact that they also go underneath the ground, so you don't notice the harm that they're doing. They look so pretty, but they're suffocating the trees. There's a really dark tinge to this, and I enjoy the metaphors. And, I mean, it's tagged as about disease and mental health, so I think that Rex's comment makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely, yeah. And I like that you mentioned that there's a dark undertone to this, because that's the thing with vines. They do look, you're right, they do look beautiful, but they are selfish. They just take over, you know, if you think of them, giving them personification, they just take over. They all, you know, so excellent comment there. And Abler, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, the look at the vine and the way that it strangles the things that it clings to, you know, it wraps around and it's obscured by the leaves and the beautiful flowers. You know, a lot of vines are these gorgeous flowering plants, like, you know, wisteria and clematis and nightshade, and they usually have, like, these just gorgeous flowers that really detract from the fact that they're invasive and they're strangling everything they're stuck to. They're going in and they're stealing all the nutrients out of the soil, and even, you know, like the rhizomes, and just messing up the underground, you know, ecosystem there, the symbiotic relationships with the rhizomes and the trees, and then also, you know, pressing and compressing the branches and suffocating leaves, and just knowing that and comparing it to, like, a bad relationship, a relationship that's, you know, not healthy, but looks healthy to outsiders. And then, you know, the way that the other person in the relationship is, like, suffocating and burrowing into her. But then at the end, the twist that, well, I'm doing this to you as well. Like, I'm threading your vine. You think that you're the vine. But this is, like, a mutually parasitic relationship. It's really intriguing. And then the switch at the end, you know, that really they're the one who's looked beautiful and innocent this entire time, and they are also a vine. So I love it. I thought it was a really great write.
I have to agree. And that was a great twist at the end. I really like the stanza. It says, flowers do not deny, for they envy the vine such power. You know, the wonderful personification there of the witnessing of envy and power and wishing that we had what's on the other side of the fence. So excellent comments, everybody. Oh, and I'm sorry, Phil, thoughts?
Oh, I was fine without you worrying about me. I thought it was a great write that Angelina did. No, I was like, you know, don't worry about it. You're not going to offend me. But I thought it was a good write. I really did. I kind of wrote, hang on, let me find it. Gosh, I was doing something, so I was on the page. I thought that it was a clever piece, and I thought that it was. Yes, I thought it was, you know, the sense of meeting adversity head on, learning to fight fire with fire. And I thought it was well done, and I thought it was cleverly written. You know, the vine might be, you know, this harsh, but she's learning how to take it on. So definitely a good job with that, no matter what the adversity is. So, yeah, great piece, Evelina. It was nice to hear your work again. I know. I haven't been around. Thanks.
Yeah. It is good to see her work. I hope we get to hear from her soon.
Me too.
And, all right, up next is Morning Symphony by Robbie's Poetry. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And it goes like this. A morning symphonic brings its music to my ears as I rise from a contented rest, taking in morning's fresh air, songbirds singing their song. The energy of the morn invigorates me as woodpeckers and songbirds go about their usual morning routine. The percussive beat of woodpeckers in their distance, a warm and familiar sound, accompanied by the back and forth of songbirds with whom I wish to sing along. This happens for me every morn, as the clear energies of earliest days that energizes my soul, brings me along to new adventures as my senses awaken, gradually coming more into play. I shall be eternally grateful for this, living in the midst of nature's cradle, nature giving me its own beautiful alarm call as I rise to yet another day. End poem. Well, I have to say that was beautiful. I am not a morning person, but I really appreciated how Robbie shared with us how much he gets from the sounds, the beauty, and the energy of mornings. I thought that was just beautifully done. And Babbler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I am also not a morning person. But I do love the sound of all of those birds early in the morning, you know, and they really kind of start just as the sky starts to just lighten a little bit. And I know this because I haven't gone to bed yet. to me, that's why you need to go to sleep music. The percussive beat of woodpeckers in their distance, a warm and familiar sound, accompanied by the back and forth of songbirds, which with whom I wish to sing along. You know, just thinking of a woodpecker as a percussionist, you know, really plays into the idea of a symphony and just waking up to the alarm call of birds. I'm much too heavy of a sleeper to wake up from bird sounds, but perhaps I'd be more of a morning person if I could. I really liked this. I thought it was a lovely touch to talk about, you know, the music of the morning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. Excellent comment. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I think it's beautiful. I agree with you and Babbler that I'm not at all a morning person, but I feel like if that's your alarm, these beautiful sounds of nature, it's totally different than like the alarm on your phone or a clock. There's something really beautiful about the sounds of nature, and this makes me want to go camping and just have that be my natural alarm to just give in to the sounds of the birds. I've never thought of the woodpecker's sound being one that is as appealing as, say, the songbirds, but I like the idea of it being a percussive beat that goes with the other ones. That's a really cool way of interpreting it. I really appreciate Robbie's Poetry for expressing it in such a musical way.
Absolutely, because I'm the same way. I like watching woodpeckers. They're very beautiful and just intriguing birds because they're just always keeping busy, but I never thought of the sound as appealing, but he makes it appealing by relating it to a percussion. So, well said there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Woodsy and travails, Daisy, I said, waking up with the shrill of a alarm clock is one thing, but waking up to a normal, natural sound is something else. It does give one that energy because it's the normal heartbeat of nature, and that still rings in the veins. So, we used to wake up with the sunrise. just as a normal sense of the clock itself, our internal clock. Now people need something to wake them up from that sleep because they've been in the edge too much at night, or maybe they've been in their arms too much at night. But that's no way to really wake up. The best way, this way, the opposite up. It's easy. It's simple, and it's pleasant. It doesn't scream at you. It kind of beckons you to wake up and take purchase of the morning itself.
Absolutely. I like that. Waking up and just taking notice of the morning. I have to say he has wonderful use of imagery and sound. I like that he puts the bird calls in there. I really like him for the use of the word energy. A wonderful write all the way through and very well done. And Phil, your thoughts?
Well, I thought, I really enjoyed this. I think that Robert did did a wonderful job with his imagery. And, I'm with Babbler, those are the sounds I go to sleep to so many times. I'll be up and the sun will come up and I go, oh God, I think it's bedtime. And I lay down and I hear the birds all chirping outside. Babbler says she likes the sounds of frogs croaking. And I was like, yeah, when I was in Florida, this one time we went and there were tree frogs everywhere. I mean, everywhere.
Oh, yeah, listen to them. Boy, they're loud little buggers.
Yeah, but, it was like something out of almost a horror flick because there was a screened-in porch and they were all over the screen. It was like they were coming at it.
Oh, yeah.
And they made
and
a
they
lot
all,
of...
And they all kind of sing in unison, one after the other. It's like you're surrounded.
It was wonderful, though, because I enjoyed every bit of that sound. And, Frank said crickets. Oh, yeah, crickets. I love listening to them. It is. It's like they have their own little symphony orchestra going on out there, and I'm just, listening in. It is awesome. And, I said he had beautiful descriptions for the warmth of a morning. It was really well done. So I appreciated that very much. And thank you, Robbie.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. When my oldest niece, who's now like 30, and with kids of her own, was a toddler, we would tell her that because there would be the sound of the frogs, and we would tell her it was frogs, and she got so scared she bursted out crying because the frogs were going to get in the house. And so my brother-in-law went and found a frog, brought it in, this tiny little thing in the palm of his hand, and oh my goodness, the look on her face, it was like this, you've never seen a toddler look more relieved. I don't know what she thought frogs looked like, but she looked very relieved.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Yeah. I was a frog catcher when I was little. What were you going to say, Rex?
Huh?
Oh, I thought, for some reason, I thought I heard your voice, like you were going to say something.
Yep.
Wanted to make sure I didn't step
on you. I've got big bullfrogs next door, and we got snakes and fireflies
cool.
And all kinds of things running around the yard.
Oh, man. I'm envious. I don't get stuff like that anymore. Way back when, but not anymore.
Oh. Jean was listening to an orchestra a few days back.
Ah. Cool. Yeah. Oh, I tell you, they do get quite loud when they're singing.
Uh-huh.
That's for sure.
When I was a kid, we had bullfrogs down at the pond, and now that's some noise. They make all kinds of sounds. It's great. I love all that.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Same thing when I was a kid. Frogs, bullfrogs, right on the lake. And, very cool.
Cool.
All right. So, Rex, I've gone ahead and put your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Uh-huh. All right. Kimraeg Whisperings of Awan. Caradwyn, ye gallant silver lass, bleed forth thy Kimraeg Whisperings, blazing blades and pools of Awan, smoting dark's cleavage and setting diaphanous shadows adance as Oberon gifts your quilted birth. Wassail flows in our song as you send packing those vacuous Scaramuchian blemishes to smolder in Shylock's pockets. And Paul.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I have to say, I enjoy how sometimes in your poetry you bring the moon in and you talk to the moon as if she's a woman who deserves, you know, some praise for her beauty. I just think this is a wonderful write, very well done. And Faziana, your thoughts?
This is great. I always love the vocabulary lesson at the end of Rex's poems. I like the Shakespearean references here with Oberon and Shylock. At least I think that's what that is referencing Shakespeare plays. This is a very intelligent, right? Very nice, Rex.
Thank you, Daisy.
And Babbler, your thoughts?
I also really enjoy this, addressing the moon and noting to her directly her poetry and the beauty of what she brings to the dark. I really enjoyed it, you know, smoting dark's cleavage and setting diaphanous shadows a dance as Oberon gifts your, I'm horrible at that. I can't do Welsh. Birth, just lovely, you know, on the birth of the evening, gifted by the king of fairies, and lit by the beauty of the moon, the poetry of the moon. It's such a lovely piece, well written.
Thank you, Babbler.
Excellent comment. Yeah, I have to say that this is beautiful, and like Faziana says, I like the vocabulary lessons. I feel like you keep our minds on their toes, which is a wonderful thing, because we might get lazy if we didn't occasionally run into a Rex Wright. I like smoting dark's cleavage and setting the funniest shadows to dance. You know, I love the sense of movement within this poem. Just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And Phil, your thoughts?
Well, if I could pronounce any of this, I might say something, good. But I like your second stanza there, Rex. I mean, I can only read in English. Looking at these words going, how did you say that? You know, I do. Bleed forth thy Welsh language. See, I'm just winging it here, okay? And, you know, whisperings, glazing. And then I have to go down here again. Damn. Glazing pools of poetry. I like that stanza there. I think that is a lovely, lovely stanza. And I think the write itself, to my ear, it sounded wonderful. And I would have to, like, kind of go back and forth and check out these words to pull my act together beyond that. But I think it's excellent. You know, I never expect anything just written in English by you. I don't know why, but, yeah, great job. Good luck in that contest. Absolutely.
Thank you, Gene.
Hey, you know, I'm honest.
Well, yeah, the funny thing is, the bottom end of that the quote was, the moonlight drowns out all but the brightest stars. So I left the brightest star out. On purpose, because since you can't drown it out, you might as well send packing the those Scaramucci and blemishes.
Oh, there you go. Well, it is always an adventure to read your work, and I love that because it makes it a challenge. You know, I'm just slow on the responses when it comes to comments, but really well done. Clever.
Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.
Wonderful, wonderful comments, everyone. All right, well, all right, so I'm going to do something I don't usually do, but I'm going to do this, is I'm going to have you read Tuna Roll, Rex. Up next is Two Celestial Orbs by Poetic Picasso. And, Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
Wow, look at that picture. Two Celestial Orbs by Poetic Picasso. A silent center petal force of two celestial orbs unite in a conscious magnetic field of gravitational passion, linked to the generated electric waves surging from the embrace of tantric balance of two potent atoms of love emerging by the second. In the depths of the cosmos, the atoms evolve into the vivid animation of two luminous stars, a sensual energy of romance traversing the Milky Way and exploding quickly into an erogenous supernova displaying a kaleidoscopic rainbow of colors. We streak like a blazing comet above the moonlight gleam as we finally reach the imaginary zenith of lovers, and we orbit slowly the sun and moon as our kisses ignite the hot surface of our exotic sphere when the sun's rays cover us in erotic flames. We burn in the inferno of our passionate desires, taking us to the strong pull of the orbit of the seductive sun, and our matter takes on the unique form of a primordial fireball with steamy combustion as we then fade into the volcano eruption of Venus. Yo soy el calor de tus besos y tú eres para mí la luz de mi amor, mi pasión. End quote.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And, of course, as always, your reading of the Spanish was just as wonderful as your reading of all the rest of the poem. Very cool. And, Faviana, your thoughts?
I love this. It's fiery. I like the way that it uses imagery of space to make such a sensual poem. It's colorful and interesting, great vocabulary, and I love the picture that it's written to. This is really interesting, and I like that it has the Spanish. Frank's really good at incorporating that in, and then kindly puts the translation in the AN for those of us who can't understand the original, but appreciate the way that it sounds.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When he puts the Spanish at the end, it becomes almost like its own little poem. Excellent comment there. And Babbler, are you able to comment, or are you still taking care of a vomiting kitty cat?
Oh, no. That took care of itself pretty quick. No problem. It was literally, I usually mute myself when I'm not on, so, you know, because I have pets that like to make noises. So it just, that happened to happen right in the middle of my last comment, so I couldn't mute myself. So I'm like, this is probably not pleasant for other people listening. I really liked this piece. You know, the use of, space and really embracing the concept of a celestial body, you know, to make a sensual poem. And some of these word combinations that turn this into a more sensual piece, I just really enjoyed. Like, erogenous supernova. Like, what a concept, you know, like there's erogenous zones, but then to incorporate that in with a supernova, like this giant galactic explosion, I really enjoyed. You know, it was beautifully sensual and also really wove in so much of the celestial language and things that happen in space that, that gives emotionality to these, you know, physical events. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was wonderful. And I loved the art that went with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. And wonderful comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Yeah, it is the celestial bite in this which makes it work. So he had to go hunt for this picture first in order to get that that flavor. I mean, the centripetal, the conscious magnetic, the gravitational, the electric waves, tantric balance, atoms of love, the cosmos, the evolution. He needed that picture to actually a thought he already had. But he did it well because he incorporated quite a bit. And that kaleidoscopic rainbow of colors kind of hints at that, at the overall picture itself, without the without the vision of people, so to speak. And then that that bottom, and we burn in the inferno of our passion, our desires, taking the strong pull of the orbit of the seductive sun. So again, everything revolves around that that universal component of energy.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like that, when you mentioned the revolving around the universal component of energy. And, you know, I have to say, use of nature imagery and sensual rites is always my favorite. That and music, those two put together, like those two in sensual rites as metaphors or imagery, just always, you know, appeals to me. What I like here is he doesn't go with the gentler side of nature. He goes with that side of nature that is a force to be reckoned with, that, you know, expands and loses itself and just, you know, ignites. So I just absolutely a wonderful sensual rite and very well done. And Phil, your thoughts?
What I had said when we read this last time was, I said it was a wonderful, passionate piece. And, I loved his imagery, and I loved his take on the prompt, which was a Rumi quote that Lou had put up. And that the quote was, "Let yourself be silently drawn by the stronger pull of what you really are." And I think that he really captured that. And so, nice job, Frank. Yep, good stuff.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. All right. Up next is Caravan Songs by Asama Chiba and Babbler. Will you give that a refresh, please?
I'd be happy to. All right. This is Caravan Songs. What I feel for you is as gentle as dew, falling softly on petals of flowers that bloom in golden rays of sunlight, or like a bird when it flies over a cloudless sky, singing songs of the caravan, spreading enchantment in our heavenly paradise, and those lovely eyes that captivates my core and makes me float in streams of embrace entwined in each other's essence. Surrender to the wind that blew us away in an unending wave of passion. End poem.
That was a wonderful read. I always enjoy and appreciate Asama's poetry. It's so very delicate and emotive. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's almost like a Buddhist flair for the feel. Gentle as dew, falling softly on petals of flowers that blossom in golden rays of sunlight. Our heavenly paradise, the caravan. It's a kind of cockatoo. Captivates me, makes me float. Streams of embrace. It all has that feel of Buddhist enchantment. That sort of what's that place? In the mountains of Himalayas, where one finds paradise. I forget what it's called at the moment.
Nirvana.
No.
It's still, a mystical even place. Even forgetting what it's called, it's still excellent comment there. And you're right, it does have that tone
from
to it.
From the tip of my tongue.
What's that?
The word Rex is looking for is right on the tip of my tongue. I know exactly what he's talking about.
I know.
And I
that bothers
think
me.
It's the word. Xanadu. Xanadu.
Was that it, Rex?
What?
Xanadu.
Xanadu? Yes, but there's another one too. But Xanadu fits.
All right. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
This is beautiful. I especially liked as gentle as dew falling softly on petals. There's a delicate intimacy to this that I really appreciate. Beautiful.
The word I'm looking for is Shangri-La.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, that one too.
I don't know why none of us could think of that. It's like one of those words that once you said it, it's like, oh, why didn't we think of that? But pretty cool. And let's see here. Viviana made a wonderful comment. Babbler read it beautifully. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed it. It's just, a pretty, it's just a really light kind of touch on, like, how they feel about this person. And then all these beautiful metaphors and similes, about it's like birds and flower blossoms. And I can't say I know what a carillon sounds like, but I imagine it's something kind of magical and light based on the other things that they talk about. And just letting them float away, things that take to the sky. I really loved like the kind of ephemeral and light nature of the way they love. I just find it very beautiful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. Yeah, this has some beautiful imagery to it. And like I said, it's emotive. And I like the idea of a bird singing, or I'm guessing it's a kind of a bird, that being spreading enchantment. I also like floats in streams of embrace entwined in each other's essence, surrender to the wind. Surrender to the wind has a feeling of surrendering to fate, but giving the whole tone really feels like, surrendering to a fate that was meant to be, it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. So, excellent, right? And your thoughts, Phil? All right. I'm going to guess that Phil had to wander away. All right. And talking slowly so she has a chance to unmute herself. And all right. Up next is Opium by Silent Dreaming and Aphasiana. Will you go ahead and read that for us, please?
Opium by Silent Dreaming. Nails painted blue and sharpened into stilettos, she scratches her legs until they bleed, then covers them in tight black dresses and floral lace. The next morning, her hair is tangled like wiry branches, wet with the dew of drool. Dawn comes and goes. The lilies by the kitchen sink wilt, unwanted. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Aphasiana. I have to say, that is just a beautiful brevity. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I really, really like this piece. The idea that this woman is like a plant, and she gets dressed up, but she doesn't care for herself. She has thorns for nails, basically, like stiletto-sharp nails that she scratches herself until she bleeds and then hides it from the world in floral lace. And the next morning, she looks a hot mess. And the lilies by the sink wilt unwatered, as she does not care for herself, the plants, that is the metaphor for her is also uncared for. And it is just really, it says so much in so few words. I really like this piece.
I have to agree. Well said there. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'll second that. She's drawn quite the thought off of this plant itself. The sharpened spikes, that scratchy, you see, the blue lace, the fact that night comes and in the morning it's a tangled mess with some dewdrops on it. Then again, that also is a clever overlay for the use of this woman who thinks not much of herself as she goes out to whatever she does at night. And in the morning, she's perhaps said, a mess. And but that thought, but the lilies by the kitchen sink wilt unwatered, that there is that note to a double note that goes to her as well, because in that moment, she is just as wilted as those lilies, being that kind of a mess, because you don't know what's been drooled and slathered all over her from the evening's mess that she got into.
I like that. I like that. Great observation. I like how this has that nature imagery, but there's such a kind of a dark undertone, like you said, the whole idea of the mess that was gotten into the night before. And I really like this all the way through, but especially she scratched her legs until they bled because it's such visceral imagery. And the next morning her hair is tangled like wiry branches wet with dew of drools. The wiry branches is such a vivid way to describe hair that has gotten messed up from a night of misbehaving and getting in trouble. Very creative and well done. And Phil, your thoughts? All right. Well, then we will go ahead and move on to the next poem, which actually we are going to go with. I'm gonna put up a poem that Phil put on the board because I like it and I want to make sure it gets read. And I will go ahead and give this one a read. All right. And this is Spring's Release by My Eyes. And it goes like this. Autumn's oak rises to a different touch, slipping out of her chrysalis of snow and ice, seeing only the sun's warm glow. His warmth envelopes her, freeing her from the cold. Her arms reach out to him as he renews her soul. His loving touch has released her. Once again, she is free. Winter's cold grip erased from her memory as if it had never been. Buds of hope bursting from within. The sun guides her now, watching her as she blossoms, blanketed in the soft fragrance of spring flowers. She soaks in the warm and gentle touch of rain, soft rain upon her new form. Sun's rays grow strong as the days pass, beckoning her closer. She grows. End poem. I have to say that was just a beautiful use of all four seasons as a metaphor for growth of self and growth within a loving relationship. Just absolutely beautiful. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I kind of had the thought to, it's like Isis and Osiris, the thought of life, rebirth, renewal that Osiris brings, and Isis, the one who actually brought him back from the dead at one point. So there's kind of a communal touch in this. The sun is that offering the warmth of life, the newness coming from for the new year that comes blasting out the cold, which is stretched maybe a little bit too long. But now everybody's awakened to that, and the sun is offering up that which she has set in winter is now longing to cold and bare once more.
Oh, I like that. And it does have that mythological feel to it. Well said there. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I love this. I thought it was gorgeous in the way that it was worded. I thought that using nature to describe the human experience also felt like the human experience explaining nature. It was like it worked both ways, and it was like very intelligently put together in that way. The beginning really caught me with the chrysalis of snow and ice. It was like that transformation of the butterfly or moth when it's, you know, that transformation is painful and then it ends up being even more beautiful. So having the winter be what you need to go through to appreciate the spring, I thought that that was a really strong start to this poem that just grasped me.
Absolutely, absolutely well said there. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I enjoyed this because it does so many things in a pretty short poem. I mean, it talks about, you know, the dormancy of a plant, you know, hardening itself to winter and then going through all of the seasons till it blooms. And then as a metaphor also for, like, you know, a reawakening of a person to bring them out of this shell and have them blossom as a person. But also the love that there is between the oak and the sun, you know, the sun's warmth and the enveloping arms and, you know, the way that this masculine sun guides the feminine tree to bloom, to grow, to become better, you know, in the way that a good relationship does. So I really enjoyed this piece. I think it touches so many layers in really not that many words. Wonderful.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comments, everybody. And, just absolutely a beautiful write, Phil. The sense of growth and love all the way throughout, and the metaphors just spot on.
Thank you, everybody. I feel guilty because I was away for the first poem for Osama. And when I came back, I was trying to catch up, and I missed the second poem. And then you read my poem, and here I sit going, yeah, that's good.
Well, honestly,
you know how to throw the guilt on me. That's okay.
Well, I honestly figured you had just, like, was getting some much-needed rest. Like,
oh,
you know,
no,
you could just,
no, I just wanted to. I had to run out of the room. So, anyway, sorry. I didn't
no problem. I didn't think anything of it. I just wanted to make sure your write got shared simply because, well, because I'm just one of those people that if I like a poem, I want to make sure it gets shared. So.
I appreciate that, and I thank you for all your kind words, everybody.
Absolutely. And up next we have Gravity by Nosering Poems and Rex. Will you give that a read for us?
I knew I was getting this. Gravity by Nosering Poems. Simpering through mine like Rama, I get lost in thy reveries down the memory lane. Sweet vistas and cotton pumpkin sunsets, coaxial, following thy wavering trial. Soaring clouds and empty fields, like cut paper plane, giving upon thee, just now bleeds inside. Core weighs heavier as thy effervescence in airs I breathe, when thee swirling as bee around me. Like a hideous postcard unveiled, dwelling in thy closet, me as passerby, probing for that onus note, scripted scroll in thy letterbox ichor vessel. Ne'er it takes long to sense thee always with me, holding on the momentum, even thy unspoken verse. I succor my existence. I've fallen hard, more harder than for. Every tempest I'm summoning thee within me, antidote shot cajoling to mine ardor, or the amorous I yen with longing in this realm. He embraced me without touch, all motionless, particle in thy platonic nudge, enveloping thy universe, unchained within wireless Desiree, the aposy that can naught recite mine lips. All is white, ruin to forest. Uncage me from this drowning ache, thy zealous liquid dragging me deep, afloat mine amor, now begging to evaporate from thy consuming venomous drill. Catastrophe of mine, fornum gazebo, always grasp at naught to unshackle grip control. I'm just blind mole, thy naked orbs can naught gaze to nudge it. Something always brings me back to thee. I'm again full of thy ardent spill, dead within falling over my knees, killing myself, stabbing dagger deep, churns to crushed granules, merging in thy numbness, abysmal doom mapping thirst. There, secured something, so much with tranquil hunger, yet no string detached, and sinking ship, unconquerable is thy Sabrina dip. Burning ambrose within ignis of thy craving, pray of just another keepsake lithium lither, be savoring an amorphine essence, me slowly drenching all over me, absorbing sight, swallowing me. Halt, leave me be. Let me go. I drift from bridge blues from the pull of thy shore. Insatiated phrases let embers swirl. Pirouetting with stellas unreined, tuned to darkness midriff, I stare into hovering stark lumen, our own might gaping, thy reflector seeping vacuum night. Please do naught, do naught. Clasp me down to thy magnetic roots. Unjustified are these inkling molecules, sculpting hues, stranded. I'm loophole of invisibilis screen, simmering on earthy mold. I'm petrified of thy gravity. And poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I knew your voice would be good for that one. And Babbler, your thoughts.
You know, for me, and I guess I'd have to read this, I think, a few times. You know, I'm getting the story of a woman who is thinking back on a relationship and walking through it almost like it's completely happening again. You know, thinking about, you know, how much they love them and how much they're tied together, and then falling for them, like, again, even in this reminiscence, and being dragged down back into this horrible relationship that they left. At least I get the impression that it's not a great relationship, you know, petrified of thy gravity. And then to start it again, like, it's very cyclical, like, drawn to this person endlessly, to the point where even thinking back on them restarts the cycle. The use of language in here is really interesting. It's such a wild mix of modern and, like, archaic. I was particularly interested in the line, I'm falling hard, more harder than for, because it's like, it's grammatically incorrect, but it's also almost Shakespearean. And also very modern sounding, just like more harder. And I just, it gives this poem almost like this timeless feeling, because it doesn't really fit. It's like anachronistic no matter when you're trying to place it. So I really enjoyed it. I thought this was a fascinating piece.
Absolutely. And she does have a way of using language and make it not only uniquely her own, but does give it kind of that feel of it being almost classic-like. So, wonderful observations. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
Well, I realized halfway through, this is based on a song, and it's basically the exact lyrics of the song, except in Shakespearean language. It's translated into the archaic language, but it's the song Gravity by Sarah Bareilles, which is like one of my favorite songs. And so I'm like, I know this. And then I look down at the bottom and it has the song and I'm like, yep, there it is.
Oh, wow.
So it's, It's an old-fashioned version of the song. So you guys have to listen to the song. And the song is about either an abusive relationship or addiction, and I think maybe both, and being sucked into that negativeness and being drawn to it inevitably. I don't know, I love the song so much. So I was like, I am getting this. Why am I so connected to this? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that it's the song. It's just reworded to sound like almost Shakespearean.
Well, good catch there. Good catch. I like that. Interesting. Very cool. And I'll have to, I probably have heard the song before, but just it's not clicking simply from the name of it. I have to listen and either go, nope, never heard that before, or, oh, yep, I know that. And Rex, your thoughts?
I agree with Stacey on the addiction angle, whether that's addicted to love or addicted to drugs, it doesn't really matter. It does walk on that addiction, but it bites on the imbalance and the heavy need, because that's where the gravity comes in. Core weighs heavier as I effervescence in air as I breathe. When the swirling is be around me, so you can roll both ends of that a really bad love or the drug that she's sitting around, like a hideous postcard unveiled, dwelling in thy closet. Is that picture memory of what used to be you is a picture postcard, but now the ugliness is sees her as a passerby. Let's see what else. It never takes too long to sense thee always with me. There is that note again to addiction. I'm falling hard, more harder than before. That kind of falling off the wagon. They embrace me without touch. She's hitting on that platonic nudge. That sort of being on the better side, and all of a sudden being drawn back in. All this white ruins of harvest, that which she has taken the time to multiply on her own, is now drawn her back in. And catastrophe, something always brings it back to be again. It all points to somebody who's continually goes back. They dry themselves out and they walk backwards into that realm. And then that thought, I'm petrified of thy gravity. They have no will to walk outside, even if they've got a support group around them.
I like that. Yeah, there's a lot of imagery and lines in there that do speak, as you say, of the struggle with addiction. So excellent comments, everybody. And thank you, Athena, for sharing that right with us. Much appreciated. All right. Up next, we have Summer Smile by Marcus Dagon. And Phil, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, I will.
Awesome.
Am I? Okay. Marcus Dagon, correct? Summer Smile. Pam,
correct.
You thought of me. I owe you one. Excuse me, a nice little short one. Summer Smile by Marcus Dagon. I smell cotton candy inside your fingertips. My mouth watering, not wanting this to end. Our fleeting breath to life within our youth. I smelled your hair everywhere that day. Such a beautiful summer day, trapped within a hairbrush. End poem.
Excellent read there, Phil. And yes, I was thinking of you with that nice little shorty there. I have to say, this is a wonderful brevity. And I love the use of cotton candy in the beginning and the imagery of summer day trapped within a hairbrush. One just absolutely lovely imagery right there. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I agree with you. It's interesting to have the cotton candy at the beginning where it's like her fingers had that sweet smell, and then going to the summer day is within her hair. There's something like very nostalgic about that, where smells can bring back memories, and it's like he's associating certain feelings with the smell that he's remembering of this woman.
Absolutely. I did like that, the use of smell. So wonderful observation. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this piece. It kind of flows from one metaphor to another. And they don't have much to do with each other, yet somehow it makes sense. You know, the cotton candy inside your fingertips. You know, I imagine, like, kissing or like even sucking on the end of the fingertips. And it just never wanting it to be over. And that's, you know, the memory. And then thinking back on it, I smelled your hair everywhere that day. Such a beautiful summer day, trapped within a hairbrush. Just the smell of her hair, you know, just it made his entire world like it was a hairbrush in this just beautiful way. Just this reminiscing on this gorgeous day and this time. And the smells and the sensations spent with this woman. It's a really gorgeous little short poem. I love it.
Absolutely. And the cotton candy really does make me think of a summer day, like especially if you're visiting a fair during the summer or something like that. So very cool comments. All right. Up next we have You Are My Sunshine by Neutron Bomb and Aphasiana. Would you give that a read for us, please?
You Are My Sunshine by Neutron Bomb. A seedling appeared in a crack and unfurled its leaves in diffused sunlight. Fence heights were raised by the neighbors, and this fragile seedling was starved. We replanted this geranium seedling, which began to thrive in its new locale, propagating leaves and growing even higher despite slipstream of frostbitten air. It survived the inclement weather without a cloche, a makeshift greenhouse to shield it from the frigid conditions, growing buds that never bloomed. We tended the garden, depleted of nutrients, enriching the soil with compost, and it thrived on the rain that trickled freely, but that pesky sun eluded it. Still it grew higher, chasing sunbeams, and the buds began to unfurl, revealing fuchsia tips like alabaster fine bone china. You grew strong, but with the season's change, your petals wilted and the vine was stripped and petals tarnished, falling like a teacup from its saucer, bursting into filaments of china. Basking in the memory of that bloom, not plucking the pernicious weeds, this flower is imprinted amongst the heavens. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Aphasiana. I have to say, Neutron's poetry just always touches my heart and my mind. It just makes you think and it makes you feel at the same time. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, it's beautifully done metaphorically, and I knew where it was going when it got down to that. Still it grew higher, chasing sunbeams, and the buds began to unfurl, revealing fuchsia tips like alabaster, fine bone china. I knew at that point this was going to allude to death with what was to come. You grew strong, but with seasons change, your petals wilted, and the vine was stripped, and petals tarnished, falling like a teacup from its source and bursting into filaments of china. That note is thought of something had finally broken there, basking in the memory of that bloom, not plucking the pernicious weeds. This flower is imprinted amongst the heavens. The pernicious weeds, the thoughts of the fact that of passing on notations of missing, all of that sits right in there.
Absolutely. You're right. Great observations. And Babbler, your thoughts?
Well, I just want to start off with, you know, the title, the You Are My Sunshine. That song, You Are My Sunshine, I can't listen to it without crying. It's just one of those songs that, like, really hits me.
you know, there's just this really melancholy note to it that just, you know, it speaks of loss while it talks of such happy things. And that's what I get from this, you know. This person is this flower that is just struggling so hard to be happy and just searching and hunting and hunting and hunting for this happiness and doing everything that it possibly can. And then, you know, it just fails. You know, the season changes and it's lost. And it's really just, you know, very, like, heart-wrenchingly sad. You just want to grab this flower and just lift it up and you know, but you're not a part of the story. So it's just very heart-wrenching and very beautiful and very subtly done, and I love the piece. And it just smacks of pain. So I love it.
Absolutely. Well said there. Yeah, I feel the same way about that song. My mom used to sing that song to us when we were kids, and I would sing it to my children when they were little. Of course, you know, my voice is such one of those voices that my children quickly learned to tell me to be quiet and stop singing because I sounded horrible. But I tried. And I apologize. Afasiana, did you get comments on this one? I don't think you have you?
No, I haven't yet. It's very intense in its sadness, and but at the same time, like Babbler said, it's subtle. You know, it doesn't tell you directly what it's about, but it seems to me that the person struggled with depression because, you know, the happiness was blocked by the way that things were and the people around them. So moved to a new place or started a new life and, like, had a better chance there, had some people who were supportive, which you see through the enriching soil where the compost was added, and it had the water, but it wasn't enough. There was still not the joy and the what they needed to blossom. My thought is suicide. And it is tagged as, or says in the AN that it's about someone who's gone but never forgotten. And for me, it seems like it's someone who didn't get what they needed, and there were some people who tried to help, but there still wasn't that sunshine. And yet this person may have been sunshine to the other people before they were taken. It's very, very sad, but beautifully written.
Yeah, I agree. It's sad, emotive, beautifully written, and the thought of this plant being a metaphor for that person that struggled to get the sunshine that they needed, you know, I just think it's a delicate metaphor, but it's powerful at the same time. And your thoughts, Phil?
Well, and Faziana, you did have this correct. This was written for a dear friend of Neutrons who committed suicide, and they were very close. I mean, you definitely read it right and nailed it. And I, you know, I had said when I read it last time, it was beautifully expressed. And I thought it was a wonderful metaphor for what she was trying to say. And I think she did, an excellent job with it. So, you know, Neutron, it was a pleasure to read this piece again. First I'm like, was this a prompt? And I'm like, no, it wasn't a prompt. But when she had written it, she put it on one of our shows. I don't remember which one. And as I say, I think she did a wonderful job. And, hopefully, the pain has eased up a bit for her because I know they were close. So nice job. Thanks, everybody.
Absolutely. Wonderful, thoughtful comments there, everyone. Thank you. All right. Up next, we have A Witness to April Awakenings by Randall S. And Babbler, would you read that for us, please?
Absolutely. One second.
this is Witness to April, Awakening. She comes, a moderate tempest, on the coattails, chilly wings, full of tawdry moons, dripping silver upon elliptic pads, escorted by charming halos, while vibrant dreams yearn to breathe for sacred moments, before fallen ideas awaiting resuscitation are but a cast of shadows, loitering just beyond winter's jagged teeth. Although I seldom listen to the cackle of maidens riding slippery winds, until lies, lingering in a facade of dreary haze, becomes fully vanquished by truth with joy-filled voices, and loneliness worn by cheap smiles, hidden behind putrefied masks, are merely natural skins shed with reptilian anguish. Yet with diligence, I watch the purge of enlightenment push through the bellies of dust it once crawled into, as tomorrow's hope rolls around heaven like flames in a virgin carriage sporting gold wheels. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Babler. Thank you. And this is a beautiful and thoughtful write from Randall S. I really like this. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I really enjoy the way some of this is worded, like riding slippery winds. I've never thought of wind as slippery, but I love that description of it. The loneliness worn by cheap smiles, you know, there's that fake smile that just doesn't have the depth that I can picture with that. A purge of enlightenment is a really interesting way of putting that, like to get rid of that and push through the bellies of dust in it once crawled into, like enlightenment under the dust. There's something really interesting about that. This whole thing is very intriguing, and I feel like warrants a second read. It's really cool. I struggle a little bit with the font because I'm half blind, but from what I understood of it, it's wonderful.
Absolutely, and I know what you mean. There are some fonts that get to me, too. Excellent comment. And Babbler, your thoughts?
This is a really interesting take on the coming of spring. You know, it starts so simply. She comes, a moderate tempest, on the coattails of chilly wings full of tawdry moons. But things kind of change and become darker, you know, before fallen ideas awaiting resuscitation are but a cast of shadows, loitering just beyond winter's jagged teeth. You know, these things that slumber are just waiting to be woken up, and they're not awakening until lies lingering in a facade of dreary haze becomes fully vanquished by truth with joy-filled voices. You know, waiting for the ugliness to fade and kind of hoping that April is going to bring this change in this remarkable, you know, fanfare. It's a weird mix of like the dark and the hope for spring. You know, the loneliness worn by cheap smiles hidden behind putrefied masks are merely natural skins shed with reptilian anguish. You know, wanting something, wanting things to change, wanting like a spring for numerous things, for the end of their loneliness, for the end of the coldness. I don't know. It's like this desire for spring and paired with like this hatred of winter. It's a really interesting mix of feelings to go back and forth and back and forth on. I found this piece very fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree that the it does go back and forth, and I like that because I think anyone who lives through four seasons, like, you know, for me, for example, you know, and spring does give you that sense of hope, but there's also such an ugliness to it as things are melting and all the dirt is all around, and, you know, and I really liked the stanza, and loneliness worn by cheap smiles hidden behind putrefied mask, our merely natural skin shed with reptilian anguish. The idea of spring shedding the old, like a snake sheds its skin, I thought was just, well, absolutely, it was intriguing and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
I think Babla was hitting on the right notes. That third stanza, while vibrant dreams that finishes out with winter's jagged teeth, that there's a wariness in that moment. It kind of bites at the thought of Groundhog Day, six more weeks of winter to be looked for, to be wary of. And then it hits on, although I seldom listen to the cackle of maidens riding slippery winds until lies, lingering in a facade of dreary haze, becomes fully vanquished by truth with joy-filled voices. There's that note. You can hear the whipping cries of those slippery winds, those cackling maidens, that crack in the, well, the wintry wind that gives birth. No, it's not quite done yet. And the putrefied mass, the loneliness, the cheap smiles, there's that, the empty trees, our million natural skin shed with reptilian anguish. There's that thought. You look at a tree in winter, in true winter, it's stark. It's death-like. It's got nothing on it. It bears no resemblance to anything living. And yet, it still lives. And then he rolls into that last, as tomorrow's hope rolls around heaven, like flames in a virgin carriage, sporting gold wheels. Now, there's that note right there to Helios finally risen, that golden chariot flashing across the sky, giving birth in the moment to the new order of warmth that is going to once more arise.
I like that. I like that. Wonderful observations there, Rex. I like that you brought up Groundhog's Day and Helios. So very cool. Excellent comment. All right. Up next is An Ocean of Cosmos by Garden Delights. And it goes like this. Floating on an ocean of cosmos, the sea breeze running fingers through our hair, studying the clouds, scudding across a denim blue sky, Saul playing hide and seek with the earth, who bubbles with laughter, keeping us astir as her belly shakes. At moonrise, she rests. We readily join her. End poem. Oh, I think that's just some wonderful personification of the earth and the sun. And I love the imagery of bubbles with laughter. Very cool there. And Babbler, your thoughts.
It paints a picture of just such a happy, idyllic day, you know, in this sea of flowers in the middle of summer, the wind running fingers through our hair, and the clouds are going by and covering the sun, and that made into like a game of hide and seek, you know, and just the perfect enjoyment of a summer day, followed by at moonrise she rests, and we readily join her, you know, a day well spent makes for easy sleeping. It's really just beautiful and lighthearted and fun, and it really does just feel like summer. It's a lovely piece.
I agree. Well said there. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I really love it. The playfulness of the sun playing hide and seek with the earth. The word scuttling, bubbling with laughter as the belly shakes. It's like it turns an earthquake into something beautiful. this is absolutely gorgeous and playful. And I feel like I want to like animate something, like draw cartoons to go with it. It's just, it's so beautiful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. And Phil, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was a great little brevity, for sure. I loved all the different images that they used throughout. And, yeah, I thought it really was just a lovely little piece. Really. Nicely done. So thank you, Garden Delights. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I do enjoy her poetry. Beautiful stuff.
Absolutely.
And, all right. Go ahead and get the next poem up. I'm going to go ahead, Dabbler, and put your poem up because I really enjoyed this one. And so go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
This is chickens. The chickens ruffle their feathers, selecting carapace delicacies from the sandy loam. Their chittering clucks, a satisfying soundtrack to a cloudy afternoon. The hen in the caramel coat tilts her head, asking and answering all the day's questions. A welcome home. And
that was a wonderful read, and I have to say, this is excellent brevity. I like one-word titles that tell you, you know, gives you a straight up what the poem's about. I like this one because I was, you know, raised around chickens. My mom always had chickens and geese. And at one point, I even had a rooster, which actually, honestly, I thought was told it was a hen because the person who, you know, looked said, oh, yeah, yep, this is a hen. And then when they're little, you just don't get up. You know, it doesn't always work out. But he actually lived in our house for a while, and I learned stuff like if they start getting obstinate and trying to peck at you, you have to show them the pecking order by using your finger and just tapping them on the forehead. And he actually became pretty well trained. All I had to do was lift my finger, and he knew he was in trouble. And, you know, so I don't know. I just think this is, you know, I really like the hen in the caramel coat tilts her head, asking and answering. They really do sometimes look like you really captured the personality of chickens within this rite, and I find it absolutely delightful and very well done.
Thank you.
And Rex, your thoughts?
All right. Let's see. I like it for its pure representation, but it also comes as a thought to a gathering of a hen party of women doing a crocheting bee or something like that, just getting together and sitting around gathering. You hit that thought, chittering clucks, a satisfying soundtrack to a cloudy afternoon. That comes with that thought of notation to a bunch of women in a small town. The hen in the caramel
Ooh,
coat
I like that.
Tilts her head, asking and answering all the day's question, a welcome home. There is that final note there, the sort of, the men have come to pick up the wives, so to speak. They've been busy whatever they're doing. It might be putting together a meal for someone who's just died. So there's a busyness in this that works well, too, even if it is just about the chickens themselves.
I like that.
Yeah, very cool.
Okay, I was way off track.
No, it's still, it works, though. And
it works very
it
well.
It does.
But no,
that's what I saw in it, because it made sense to, like, a small town where you've got these older ladies who do this sort of thing as a helping around town where they're needed.
Yeah, no, I grew up in a small town. I know what you mean.
Yeah, definitely. But great comments there. And All right, we only got 10 minutes left, so I'm going to go ahead and move us forward. And up next is Enlighten, Don't Frighten by Oil Can Murphy. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Enlighten, Don't Frighten by Oil Can Murphy. Raise your words, not your voice. It is rain that grows flowers, not thunder, by Rumi. A raising of voice heard through all the lands, a breaking of trust, my clay in your hands. Respecting authority, waiting for your thunder to pass, your long menacing decibel shattering my internal glass. A rich language, your brilliant mind, all for climbing this great height. I see the cringing sound, I long to see the light. Words of wisdom, a seismic shift from delusion to reality. Your great opportunity to gift my ever-growing confidence of clarity. In the calm before a storm, prepare as best can be done. But please don't voice unnecessary storm, the unnecessary wilting of blooming human. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. Let's see what happens if I throw Phil for a loop and have her comment first.
She would do that.
I would.
You would. I'm like trying to still.
Would and did.
Well, I can't dare walk away, you know. It'll be my turn anyway. Anyway, I think that this was a great piece by Orkan. I thought it was clever. I kind of like the take on the prompts. Where was I? I don't know. Words of wisdom, a seismic shift from delusion to reality, your great opportunity to gift my ever-growing confidence of clarity. You know, in the calm before a storm, prepare as best as can be done. But please don't voice unnecessary storm, the unnecessary wilting of a blooming human. It's clever. I think that, raise your words, not your voice. It's rain that grows flowers, not thunder. I don't know. I think you did a nice job with this. And I see you got an honorable on it. So nice work. Nice work, Oil Can Murphy. Well, the Rex
Absolutely. And Rex did an excellent read, and that was a great comment, Phil. I really like how this seems to be about growth that happens when you open your mind and absorb the richness of language. So wonderful right there. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
First of all, I love the quote that it's written to, but I also really liked the way that this was put together. I like your long, menacing decibel shattering my internal glass. That's really something that kind of resonates with me. It's like sometimes if people are too loud or they have a certain tone, then I have trouble following what they're saying because I'm overwhelmed by that. So the shattering my internal glass hit me there. But then someone's rich language can change things completely. And those words of wisdom as a seismic shift, that was a really cool way of expressing that. This was really interesting. I'm going to have to read more from Oil Can Murphy.
I agree. Well said there. And all right, up next we have Circle in the Sky by K.G. Day. And Afasiana, would you give that a read for us, please?
Circle in the Sky by K.G. Day. Scents of pine float on a summer breeze. The moon peeks from behind the trees. She glows brilliantly with golden light over glassy water, black by night. Then a flutter through the trees, a howling heard amongst the leaves, giving thanks unto the stars, leading creatures near and far. Circle cycles without mistake, like water ripples on the lake. End poem.
Wonderful read there, and I have to say this is just beautiful use of rhyming couplets to describe the night sky and the moon, and I really like she glows brilliantly with golden light over glassy water, black by night. That is captivating. And Rex, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is what I was talking about, that picture before. You've got that nice perfectly outlined. You've got a center spot with the tree line and the water. You've got the moon that reflects, and it's as above as so below. Now, if you turn that onto its left side and look at it, you see the tree again as that bushy one on the right, which mirrors both in the sky and the lake. And you've got the land and the reflection of the lake as the tree trunk with a pair of eyes kind of looking out from between on the either side of the tree itself with a great reflection of thought and something to play with. And this delves into the thought of the nature itself, the scent of pine, the moon peeking from behind the trees, and the thought how circle cycles, without mistake, that there's that ease of thought when you've got calm like this. Woodland creatures come out, they feed, they'll drink, and there's a sense of a peace around the land. And when you hit that last one, like water ripples on the lake, there's that calm. Everything walks itself out from that point, and you can see it rippling across the whole lake because it won't stop until it reaches the other side.
Absolutely, you're right there. It is just beautiful imagery. And Babbler, your thoughts?
Well, I'm very honored to see in the AN this was inspired by me. I believe this is in response
to my
poem.
Oh, look at that. Oh, my goodness. Very cool. Very cool.
My poem, Cranes. I love the imagery in here, you know, the it's almost like a holding of breath to just enjoy a moment and an image, this glassy lake. And then the flutter through the trees is the releasing of the breath and the letting the moment pass. And then that wind, of course, creates the ripples on the lake. It's just this beautiful pause to just enjoy a moment of nature and enjoy a scenery. I think it's beautiful brevity.
It really is. It really is. And it's such an honor to inspire another poet. I didn't even notice that, so very cool. And all right, well, I have to say this has been a wonderful show. Thank you to all of you. Thank you to Phil for all you do, and thank you to Rex because, you know, we just worked like a double shift together. And
I Dig a Pygmy by Charles Hawtrey on the Deafheads. Phase one in which goddess gets her oats.
You're right. And thank you to Aphasion and Babbler for calling in. Thank you to everybody who provided rights for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. And, of course, Victoria, we hope you feel better soon. 8:30 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, join Gray Eye Smith and Company for, what's the name of the show?
The Garden of Enlightenment.
Yes, thank you. And, Rex, tell us about your After Midnight show. Oscar Wilde.
Okay. We're letting your Oscar run wild after midnight. We've got some quotes in there for our people to play with. Things like, we are all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars. And my favorite of the bunch, what is it? As creative acts, there is no significant difference between art and murder.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm looking forward to that. And Aphasiana, tell us about your upcoming shows. I'm guessing Aphasiana dropped. All right, then I will tell you about my upcoming shows, which is Phil and I have Twisted Tuesdays, which I'm running a contest that's with the artwork of Daniel Rosen. And also Into the Darkness, which has three poems for inspiration. I also have a contest running for a Strange Magic show that doesn't quite have a date yet, but you still might want to check it out because it's got some cool prompts. And Babbler, you have a contest running for Partner Part Saint with quotes from Supernatural.
Yes. So I've picked out several quotes from Supernatural to inspire people to write that I think is the theme of the show well. And so that show will be on Friday, I guess technically Saturday morning, 12:30. It's hard for me to think of that as Friday. So at 12:30 a.m. on Saturday.
I understand that. Wonderful. Wonderful. All right. Well, this has been a great show, gang. Love and appreciate you all. And
thank you, everybody. Good night.
Night, gang.
Night.
Thank you, Babbler.